Turn to Proverbs 11 and verse 12. I'm just going to cover one verse again tonight. I think last week we got through two, but only one tonight. Proverbs 11, 12 says, "He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace." He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor. Let's define some of those terms. Void, I'll give you the first definition, which is not how it's being used here, but it is an application of it. Of a see, benefice, etc., like a Catholic thing, like a see where a bishop is or something. I think they call it the Holy See, where the Pope sits, I believe. Anyway, having no incumbent, holder, or possessor, unoccupied, vacant. Number four is not occupied by visible contents, containing no matter, empty, unfilled. Kind of like between the ears of a lot of our politicians, if you want to have an example. Wisdom is capacity of judging rightly in matters relating to life and conduct, soundness of judgment in the choice of means and ends, sometimes less strictly sound sense, especially in practical affairs, opposed to folly. And then despise, he that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor. To despise is to look down upon, to view with contempt, to think scornfully or slightingly of. And a neighbor is one who lives near or next to another, one who occupies a near or adjoining house, one of a number of persons living close to each other, especially in the same street or village. So if we put the definitions into the verse, as I've been doing now for quite some time in this study, we see that the man that possesses no sound judgment or sense and makes poor decisions, looks down upon, views with contempt, and thinks scornfully of those who live in close proximity to him. Now we're going to look at some of the whys and wherefores here of why a man does this and you know, reasons and things like that. But if you think about it just from a big picture, first of all, if you find a man who's void of wisdom, then you've likely found a man who despises his neighbors. If you think about the opposite of that, if you think about wise people that you know, or, and I'm not talking about Solomon's here, but just even decent, good people, how many of those do you know that just hate and despise their neighbors down the street without a good cause, unless their neighbor's just absolutely horrible or something? But how many decent, wise people do you know that just hate and despise their neighbors? You know, probably not very many. And then on the other hand, if you find a man who despises his neighbors, you'll likely have found a man that's void of wisdom. So how many people do you know that despise their neighbors, are always fighting with their neighbors, complaining about their neighbors, you know, saying all kinds of slanderous and evil things about their neighbors? If you know anybody like that, chances are they're probably void of wisdom. They're probably not a wise or smart person, typically. So these are indicative. When you find somebody that hates his neighbor, he's probably an idiot. And when you find an idiot, he probably hates his neighbor. You know, so just observation would probably bear that out. Despising others is a mark of foolishness and pride. Let's look at Luke 18, 9 through 13. Now, of course, I did have the caveat, they're without a cause. I mean, some neighbors deserve to be despised based on their behavior, but I'm talking about typically that people that just can't get along with their neighbors. It doesn't matter who their neighbor is. It seems like everybody that moves in, they have a problem with them, right? And there are people like that. It doesn't matter who it is. They always seem to have some kind of a strife with somebody. Luke 18, 9 through 13 says, "And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in a week, I give tithes of all that I possess.' And the publican, standing afar off, would not so much as lift up his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.'" So you notice how this man here is obviously full of pride, and he despises others. Right? So those two things go together. If you're proud, you're probably going to look down on others, especially others that you view to be in competition with yourself or better than yourself. Proud people do not like to find other people that outshine them in any way. And when they do, they despise them and they try to cut them down and make them look bad or outright slander them or whatever they have to do to try to make them make themselves look better in their eyes or in other people's eyes. Turn to Psalm 123. I guess I should have given you that verse before I started talking. Psalm 123, 3 through 4. It says, "Have mercy upon us, O Lord, have mercy upon us, for we are exceedingly filled with contempt. Our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorning of those that are at ease and with the contempt of the proud." You see how proud people have contempt for others. Contempt and despise would be, well, they are synonyms, as a matter of fact. Remember, despise means to look down upon, to view with contempt. Right? So we see here that these things are definitely tied together. Pride, foolishness, and contempt. Like I asked before, how many wise men do you know who despise their neighbors and those closest to them without a just cause? I don't know. I mean, most wise people I know usually get along with their neighbors pretty well, unless their neighbors are just outright jerks or something. But, you know, typically speaking, it's not that hard to get along with your neighbor, right? Even if you don't really care for the guy, you don't have to condemn him and backbite him and spread malicious rumors about him and all that. Okay, you just don't like him? Well, don't like him. You just don't deal with him. But you don't have to hold him in contempt. Now, a man who has wisdom will not despise his neighbors without good cause. And there's two reasons for this, or at least two. I'm going to give you two. The first reason that a man with wisdom wouldn't despise his neighbor without a good cause is because it's sinful to despise one's neighbor. And of course, a good man doesn't want to do something that's sinful, break God's law and upset God. Psalm 14 and Proverbs 14 and verse 21. Proverbs 14, 21, "He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he." Now, of course, with a lot of Proverbs, these are generalizations. You would not necessarily be sinning if you despised your neighbor if he was in open adultery or something like that, right? But he that despises his neighbor for no good reason, right, he sins. The Bible teaches that, conversely, that we're to love our neighbors as ourselves. Matthew 22 and verses 37 through 40. Now, this doesn't only, you're not only limited to loving your neighbor as yourself if it's somebody that lives within a quarter mile proximity of you. Because remember the disciples, when Jesus started talking about loving your neighbor, it wasn't the disciples, I think it was some lawyer, and he said, "Well, who's my neighbor?" Because he's like, "You know, I want to try to, you know, give myself some wiggle room here, and I can probably hate the guy if he's more than, you know, three houses down, right? Because he's not my neighbor." And Jesus gave the story of the Good Samaritan, and, you know, the priest passed by on the other side, a Levite passed by on the other side, and then the Samaritan, low life, in the Jews' eyes anyway, he stops and helps the man, and he said, "Who is neighbor to him?" And he said, "He that showed him mercy," right? The Samaritan. And Samaria is a long ways from Jerusalem, like if you're walking especially. So he would not have been his geographical neighbor necessarily, but he was his neighbor as far as being supposed to be treating him according to God's law is concerned. Matthew 22, 37 through 40. "Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." And if you think about it, pretty much everything in the law of Moses would be summed up with those two. Because if you love your neighbor as yourself, and I've said this many times, You're not going to kill him. You're not going to steal from him. You're not going to commit adultery with his wife. You're not going to covet his things. You're not going to lie to him. You're not going to do any of those things, right? If you love your neighbor as yourself, you're going to treat him the way that you would want to be treated, like the golden rule. You're going to treat him the way that God says he ought to be treated, and therefore you're not going to sin against him. And if you love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, then you're not going to break God's commandments either because you want to please him. So pretty much there's all the law and the prophets. The whole Old Testament could be summed up in two verses. Pretty fascinating, really. James calls it the royal law in James 2:8. I believe this is where he called it the royal law. James 2 and verse 8. If you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. So this law is at the top. And this would be one of the greater commandments. Jesus talked about if you break one of these least commandments, right? Well, this would be one of the greater commandments. This is as high as it gets. And Paul tells us in Romans 13 and verse 10 that love works no ill toward his neighbor. And of course that would include despising him without a good reason. Romans 13 and verse 8. It says, owe no man anything but to love one another. He that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. I wanted verse 10. Verse 10, love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. So love doesn't work ill. If you love somebody, you keep God's commandments toward him. Now the second reason why a person, a man who has wisdom, would not despise his neighbor is because it's foolish to do so. Because your neighbor can come in handy sometime. Sometimes it's not a good idea to be enemies with your neighbors, if at all possible, because you may need them someday. Proverbs 27 and verse 10. Matter of fact, Solomon here teaches us that a neighbor that's near is better than a brother, could be a physical brother, or even a brother in the church that's far away. You know, there could be any number of problems that we could have in our mansion, and somebody that lives in a mansion next to us, like across the hallway or downstairs, could be a lot more help to me than any of you in a pinch, right? There are certain circumstances, of course. Now, of course, I'm...
You caught that mansion part, too.
You caught that? Yeah. I'm just trying to be true to terms here. I want to call my place what it is. You know, I want to be inaccurate here. I'm looking forward to one day telling people when they ask me, where do you live? I'm like, oh, I live in the mansions behind the Ford dealership. But I haven't done it yet. It's got to be the right person that would get it. Otherwise, they'd think I'm crazy or stupid or something. But Proverbs 27 and verse 10. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. If you have a calamity, like let's say a water pipe starts leaking in your house, and you don't know where the shutoff is, and you don't know what to do, well, it wouldn't be a very good idea for me to jump in a car and drive an hour away to my brother's place and say, hey, can you help me out? It'd be a lot better idea to knock on the neighbor's door if he's a handy guy and say, hey, can you help me get this water shut off? So in a day of calamity, yeah, it's neighbors can be very helpful. And especially, I think these passages here are probably more true now, if you'll allow me for that use of the term, more true now. But they're probably more true now than they have been in years past, because nowadays it's people don't know their neighbors. And if there was ever a real calamity, it's a good thing to know your neighbors and to be able to, you know, to band together as neighbors to help each other out, where a lot of people, I would guess probably most people today, don't have that. I think most people probably don't even know their neighbors. You know, it's different in the country, but you look at, when I say most people, suburbia, I bet you most people in suburbia don't know who their neighbors are. Maybe the ones right next to them, but for the most part, they drive their cars into the garage, they open the door automatically, they park the car, the door goes shut, they go in the house, and you never see each other. It happens all the time. And definitely in apartment complexes. You know, most people don't. Now, in ours, it's different. I know everybody in our building. We all know each other. But in a lot of places I've lived, nobody knew anybody. Nope. Neighbors can be helpful in time of need or calamity or danger. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So any of these things here where it talks about, you know, withstanding another, or falling and being lifted up, any of these could apply right to your next door neighbor. That, you know, if somebody, God forbid, is breaking into your house and you have a neighbor that's near that hears that and runs over to help, or you've rolled the lawnmower over on top of yourself in the lawn and your neighbor, you know, is close enough to see that and run over to help. I mean, there's all kinds of examples there.
Drive your car over the sidewalk and into the...
Yeah. Yeah, if you drive your car into somebody else's mansion, then you can, you know, somebody can run out there and rescue you. Yeah, poor lady won't be doing that anymore. She finally gave up her driver's license, so that was
the final straw.
Good thing for all involved, I think. So. Okay, so why do those who are void of wisdom despise their neighbors? And I have 3 reasons, at least. The first reason is that they're stupid, and therefore that they hate those who reprove and correct them. So that would be one reason. Let me just give you a few verses for that. Proverbs 15 and verse 5. A fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. So a foolish person, a stupid person, despises instruction and reproof. Somebody that tells them where they're wrong or tells them what they should be doing, you know, fools don't like that. Be a good reason to hate your neighbor. If your neighbor happens to be the one that reproves you or corrects you, then, you know, you're gonna despise that person. Proverbs 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And they despise those that try to give it to them. Proverbs 9, 7 through 8. It says, he that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. So, yeah, if you had a neighbor, and he was a scorner, and you rebuked him for whatever he was doing, he's playing his music super loud and you can't sleep at night or something like that, or he's got a dog that's tied outside, it's barking incessantly, and you correct him for that and tell him what a decent human being would do in that situation, he's going to hate you for it, right? He's going to despise you. That would be a reason why. Proverbs 13 and verse 1. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. And one more. Proverbs 23 and verse 9. This is oftentimes what causes problems with neighbors, is that one neighbor is inconsiderate and another neighbor addresses it with him and then he hates him for it. And then there's some war ensues after that. Instead of just receiving the correction thanking the neighbor to have that had enough guts to come over and talk to you about whatever you were doing that was inappropriate or rude or inconsiderate, instead of thanking the person for that. Yeah, sometimes the neighbor hates you for it. Proverbs 23 in verse 9. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. So when you find such a person, don't waste your breath if possible. Now, it kind of makes sense that neighbors would be the object of derision, or what's the word that I'm looking for here? Despising, that neighbors would be the object of that, because neighbors are the ones that would be most likely to observe wicked behavior and then, you know, try to correct it. And let me give you an example of that in Proverbs 7, 6 through 10. Your neighbors, especially ones that are very close to you, they're going to see what's going on in your life. They're going to see things that are happening. They're going to observe wickedness. And if they have any guts, they might actually tell you about it. And then fools are going to hate them for it. But I'll show you here. Here's an example of a neighbor observing another neighbor doing wickedness. Proverbs 7, 6 through 10. For at the window of my house, I looked out the window, and beheld among the simple ones. So here's a man void of understanding. He's going to tell us that, as a matter of fact. And beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a man void of understanding. Passing through the street near her corner, he went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. So Solomon is looking out his window at his neighbor, and he sees his neighbor going to a harlot. And this man, by the way, is just the kind of guy we're talking about here. Void of understanding or void of wisdom. He's a fool. Now, if Solomon would have corrected that man and called him out for his wickedness, what do you suppose that man would have done? He would have despised his neighbor, of course, right? Neighbors are most likely to reprove and correct others because they're closest to them and know them best. Now, this might not happen a lot today. A lot of people just, you know, don't care and they don't think it's wrong or they just don't want controversy. But let's face it, all things being equal, your neighbor that knows you is more likely to correct you than some guy from another state that doesn't even know your name. Right, obviously. So your neighbor has more of a likelihood to correct you, although today that doesn't happen very often. But a good neighbor will rebuke his neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. Leviticus 19 and verse 17. Leviticus 19, 17. Now this would be especially true within the church, not as much with just neighbors, you know, that just secular neighbors, but especially in the church, you wouldn't want to suffer sin upon somebody. Leviticus 19:17, thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart, thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. So that could be a reason why the neighbor despises, because you might have another neighbor that doesn't like his sinful behavior and is correcting it. And another reason why a foolish neighbor, void of wisdom, might despise his neighbor is because a good neighbor will search out a claim made by his neighbor before he believes it. Proverbs 18 and verse 17. Now this makes fools mad. When fools make a claim and they tell a story or, you know, say what they've done or something, and then the other person's a bit skeptical and doesn't just take, kind of takes it with a grain of salt, and he might do a little investigation, or he might question him about it. He might, you know, say, are you sure about that? Fools don't like that. Proverbs 18 and verse 17. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him. So maybe the neighbor comes and says that another neighbor just did some terrible thing. He just came over and just shot my dog for no reason. And so the neighbor says, huh, I better search this out a little bit before I believe this guy. And then he goes and talks to the third party. He's like, well, yeah, I shot his dog because it was attacking my 2-year-old son and almost bit his head off or something. We neglected to tell that part of the story, right? Right. So, you know, the neighbor will search him out. He's going to not just believe the first story that he hears. Well, you know, fools don't like that. Fools like to believe, like to be believed for whatever they say. So these could be some reasons why fools despise their neighbors. But then here's another one. If a fool strives hastily with his neighbor and is put to shame by him, he'll despise him for that too. Proverbs 25, 8 through 10. You know, the fool doesn't bother to look into anything. He sees something that he thought happened and he's pretty well certain what happened. And it turns out that's not what happened. And he jumps all over his neighbor for it. And the neighbor says, I didn't do that. That was, you know, Joe Blow down the street or whatever. And he can prove it. And he's been put to shame now because he jumped to conclusions. Well, that'd be another reason to despise him. Proverbs 25, 8 through 10. Go not forth hastily to strive, lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof, when thy neighbor hath put thee to shame. Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thine infamy turn not away. Now you can just imagine that. If you had a neighbor, and you thought something ill of him, and you went hastily to strive with him, and then you discovered it, or you uncovered it to another. So you went, you're going to tear into this neighbor A, and then you told neighbors B, C, and D about what a horrible thing that A did to you. And then all of a sudden, you find out, they find out that he didn't do it at all, and then you look like a complete fool. And what is a person going to do in that case? Despise the neighbor. Despise all the neighbors, right? And then thirdly, those who are void of understanding are lazy and they don't take care of their property, and therefore they're likely to despise their neighbors who do take care of their property and who complain about those who don't. That would be another reason why a neighbor would despise you, a one that's void of understanding. Look at Proverbs 24, 30 through 34. I went by the field of the slothful, the lazy guy, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Kind of like the guy that's void of wisdom that we're looking at in this proverb, right? And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. So, you can imagine, it's not probably all that hard to imagine. Imagine you have a lazy neighbor, doesn't keep up his property. That'd be really hard to imagine, I know, Austin, but you, if you think hard enough, you could probably imagine such a case. Get a neighbor who doesn't keep up his property, and you could see how it would be possible. Now, in your case, I don't think it is, but you could see how it would be possible that that neighbor would despise you for keeping up your property because you make him look bad, right? You could see how that could happen. Or especially if you say, hey, why don't you clean up this junk in your yard? You know, this is bringing down my property value. I don't like looking at it. This is, you know, not exactly considerate behavior here. And what's he going to think of you? Chances are he's going to despise you and not like you, right? So those are just some reasons why he that's void of wisdom will despise his neighbor. Now, those who are void of wisdom desire evil, and therefore their neighbors will find no favor in their eyes, but rather contempt. So when you find a stupid person, a person without wisdom, he generally, he likes evil. He likes pursuing evil. He likes doing evil towards people. He likes whispering, backbiting. He likes strife and arguing. He likes evil, just in general. But likes harming other people. And so his neighbor's not going to find favor in his eyes, even if he tries to be nice to him, when you find a bona fide fool. Proverbs 21 and verse 10 says, the soul of the wicked desireth evil. His neighbor findeth no favor in his eyes. If you find a person like that that is bent on desiring evil, it doesn't matter what you do. You could pipe unto him and he's not going to dance. You could mourn unto him, he's not going to lament, as Jesus said. Best just to steer clear of such a person. And then to look at a verse that we just looked at here not long ago in Proverbs 11:9, we see that fools destroy their neighbors with their mouths. Proverbs 11 and verse 9, it says that an hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. We talked about how you can deliver yourself from a hypocritical neighbor that would destroy you with his mouth. We looked at that here when we were looking at that verse. Okay, now the second half of the proverb. But a man of understanding holdeth his peace. So let's define some words here. Understanding is power or ability to understand, intellect, intelligence. The phrase of understanding means intelligent, capable of judging with knowledge. Something came to mind, and I just wanted to give an example of he that is void of wisdom despises his neighbor. Some of you probably know who Rand Paul is. He's the son of Ron Paul. He's a senator from Kentucky. And he had a neighbor that despised him for whatever reason. I don't know if it was a political thing. I don't even think it was a political thing. I think it was some neighborly dispute. And this stuff happens where, I mean, people get into horrible, horrible disputes with neighbors about stupid things. You know, some your limb of your tree's hanging over their fence and drops a leaf on their property or something. I mean, people get into all kinds of stuff. But anyway, this guy hated him so badly. This is a few years ago now, that Rand was out in the yard mowing his grass, and this guy ran down the hill and, like, did a football thing, like, ran, you know, with his shoulder, like, straight into his back, and at full tilt, and, I mean, broke his ribs, I think punctured his lung. He was in serious, serious condition, had to have surgeries and all kinds of stuff, just because he despised him over some, and Rand said he hadn't talked to the guy in, like, 8, 10 years or something like that, but it was something that this guy just hated him. And so anyway, you know, there are people like that out there, total fools that hate their neighbors for no good reason. Okay, anyway, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. To hold is to keep watch over, keep in charge, herd, keep sheep, etc., to rule men. That is only in the Old English and early Middle English, which is long before the King James was translated. Secondly, to hold is to keep from getting away, to keep fast, grasp. So you're not going to let it go if you're holding on to something. And peace is freedom from or cessation of war or hostilities, that condition of a nation or community in which it is not at war with another. Now, the phrase to hold one's peace, you got to go down to number 13 in the definition. That phrase means, and that's what's being used here in this proverb, it means to remain quiet or silent, to keep silence, refrain from speaking. So when you hold your peace, you hold your tongue, you don't say anything. So in other words, an intelligent man who's capable of judging with knowledge will remain silent and refrain from speaking even when he's provoked by his neighbor. Because remember, it doesn't say anything about neighbor in the second half here, but it's connected with the contrasting conjunction, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. That's in contrast to despising one's neighbor. So a man, even if he is not happy with his neighbor or is provoked with his neighbor, if he has wisdom, he will hold his peace. He'll keep his mouth shut instead of causing trouble with his words. Now, let me just give you a couple of examples in the scripture of holding one's peace, being restraining one's spirit when provoked to anger. Let's look at Proverbs 16 and verse 32. Now, the phrase holding your peace is not here, but the concept is. Proverbs 16:32, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Ruling his spirit. So he has control over his spirit. You know, it says in Ecclesiastes, when the spirit of a ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place. Right? So in that case, well, the spirit was actually of the ruler, but leave not thy place is you controlling your own spirit. If he rises up against you, don't jump up and get in his face. That's a bad thing. That's a good way to get in a fight, or if it's a ruler, it's a good way to get yourself in big trouble. James 1, 19 through 20. James 1, 19 through 20. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. So slow to speak. In other words, hold one's peace. Right? That's what we should strive to do. It's a hard thing to do. Because, like our memory verses for next week say, the tongue can no man tame. All kinds of beasts, all manner of beasts have been tamed, but the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Now, conversely, it's a mark of wisdom to hold one's peace. Job 13 and verse 5. Especially when you're provoked. If you can keep silence when you're provoked, you're a wise man and you're a strong man. A lot of people think that they're tough if they can get in somebody's face and yell and scream at them. You're not tough when you do that. As a matter of fact, you're weak because you can't control yourself. And you may find out that the guy that whose face you're getting in is tougher than you are. You never know. I forget who I was talking to the other day, but and this guy was like a trained fighter, and even he said, you never want to get into a fight with some guy that you don't know anything about on the street, because you just never know what that guy is capable of or who he is, or there's all kinds of unknowns there. And if you're a guy like me, you don't want to get into a fight with anybody anywhere, even if you do know who they are. But I don't like getting beat, so I just prefer not to do that. Job 13 and verse 5. Oh, that ye would altogether hold your peace, and it should be your wisdom. It says in Proverbs, we may get to this verse, that even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. I think we will get there in a minute. So it is a mark of wisdom to keep your mouth shut, especially when provoked. Now, fools will utter all their mind in time of provocation, but a wise man will keep it until afterwards. Proverbs 29 and verse 11. Proverbs 29 and verse 11. It says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Now, I mean, the implication there is the wise man may utter all his mind too after he's away from the person that's provoked him or somebody that shouldn't hear it. He gets by himself or maybe with his spouse or something. Then he can utter all his mind, but he doesn't do it at the time. Proverbs 14 and verse 33. Proverbs 14:33. It says, wisdom resteth in the heart of him that hath understanding, but that which is in the midst of fools is made known. In the midst of them, like in their bosom, in their spirit, whatever's there is going to be, it's going to come out. But wisdom rests in the heart of the wise, in the heart of people that have understanding. It stays in there. It doesn't come out immediately. Told in Proverbs 10 and verse 19 that he that refraineth his lips is wise. Proverbs 10:19, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin. You talk long enough, especially when you're provoked, and it doesn't take very long. You're provoked and you're mad. If you talk for more than about 30 seconds, sin's going to happen. It's almost a guarantee, right? In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Hold those lips back. It says in Proverbs 21:23 that he that keepeth his mouth keepeth his soul from troubles. Proverbs 21 and verse 23. Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. You find a person that's always has trouble in his life, chances are he doesn't keep his mouth under control very well. That's probably a big part of his problem, typically. The verse that I just mentioned a minute ago, Proverbs 17:27-28, says, he that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. And he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. See, a man of understanding holds his peace. A man of understanding will keep his mouth shut concerning his irritation with his neighbor when he's around others. So maybe he does have a neighbor that really irritates him. A man of understanding isn't going to tell all the other neighbors about how bad he can't stand the other guy. You know, I've got a neighbor that is kind of inconsiderate, and I've had to go down there and knock on the door a number of times because the dog's outside barking and barking and barking. But I don't talk to the other neighbors about it. I don't tell them about it. I just, you know, try to keep it to myself, keep it between me and the neighbor, suffer it and bear with it when I can, and when it's absolutely intolerable, I go down and knock on the door, and I've had to do that a number of times. Part of it is the kids. They send the kids out. They're supposed to take the dog out. The kids go out, tie the dog, go back in and play their stupid video games, and they don't hear the dog out there barking like crazy. I think that's part of the problem. A man of understanding will hold his peace even when he is despised. And this is an interesting one here in 1 Samuel 10 and verse 27. Just came across this in my daily Bible reading not long ago. I've been reading through 1 Samuel, and I noticed this. And this was a mark of wisdom for Saul. Now, Saul did a lot of really boneheaded and sinful things, all kinds of things. Couldn't wait for Samuel, made the sacrifice, and lost the kingdom the first time, didn't obey the word of the Lord, and didn't slay the king of the Amalekites, and kept the best of the beast, and lost his kingdom the second time. And before he even had a chance to lose it the first time, he lost it the second time. You know, there's two different times that the Lord told him that the kingdom's been taken from you. And then despised and hated David and tried to kill him a whole bunch of times and just did all kinds of stupid things. But in the beginning, his beginning was better than his latter end. It's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be the latter end, supposed to be better. But with Saul, his beginning was better. When he was first made king, it was said here in 1 Samuel 10, verse 26, and Saul went home to Gibeah, and there went with him a band of men whose hearts God had touched. But the children of Belial, the children of the devil, in other words, but the children of Belial said, how shall this man save us? And they despised him and brought him no presents, but he held his peace. Here were his neighbors that despised him. He'd just been made king. Now, he could have slain them right there, then and there. But probably not a good idea. A brand new king, you got some mockers and gainsayers. If you just wipe them out, people might, you know, you might not have all the people behind you yet. It's just a good idea to maybe just to hold back for a while. And mind you, Saul was head and shoulders, literally, above the crowd. He was a big man. He could have easily taken these little punks out, and he held his peace. That was a mark of wisdom, great wisdom. And then, even after Saul took the people to war and won, then he had men that wanted to kill these men that despised him, that said this to him, and Saul wouldn't even do it then. Just look down in verse 12. And the people said unto Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. These are the sons of Belial. And Saul said, there shall not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel. So, showing wisdom there, letting mercy rejoice against judgment. In this case, he held his peace even when he was despised, when he could have done something about it. It's one thing if you're just a little shrimp and you're despised and there's nothing you can really do about it anyway, so if you're smart, you'll just keep your mouth shut. But Saul could have uttered the word and those men would have died. He could have just told somebody to kill him, but he held his peace, even when despised. And then, of course, the best example is our Lord Jesus Christ. When he was despised, he held his peace. He could have called down 12 legions of angels. He could have wiped every one of those wicked people out, but he didn't. Matthew 27, 12 through 14. It says, and when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then said Pilate unto him, hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee? And he answered him, never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Pilate had never witnessed anything like this before. Most people, when condemned, especially falsely, most people are going to come to their own defense. And they're going to say, that's not true. I didn't do that. These people are lying. And Jesus never did that. He held his peace even when he was despised of his neighbors. See, a wise man will keep his mouth shut concerning his feelings about his neighbor who hates him when he's in the presence of others. So that's different from what I said before. Before, I was talking about a neighbor that is an irritation to him. He'll keep his mouth shut about the neighbor who's irritating him, but he'll also keep his mouth shut about the neighbor who hates him to his neighbors. He's going to hold his peace in both situations. A man of understanding will commit the matter to God and let him deal with his enemies. This will be the last verse for tonight. 1 Peter 2:23. So I guess I could have called this sermon How to Get Along with Your Neighbors. Or at least there's some instruction here. There could be more, but this would be a good start. 1 Peter 2:23. Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again, talking about our Lord Jesus Christ, when he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. He didn't need to defend himself, condemn those men. He just committed his soul to God. He knew that God would take care of them. And the same thing, if you have a neighbor that despises you, just keep quiet, typically, unless you really, I mean, there's times when you need to take action, but if you can, just keep your mouth shut and let God deal with him. And God typically will. Usually, that person will end up destroying himself. That's often what happens with fools that can't control their mouths. So just let him go long enough, give him enough rope, and he'll hang himself. So that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 12.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.